Welcome, everyone, to this year's California Board of Publications Writers Workshops. And I want to thank Andrea so much for partnering on this. We're leading this together. And I want to thank Rob for recording. And I understand that he's been doing a lot of the recordings. And I was saying at the beginning of the call, we need to have some sort of special awards for our media teams, because they work so very hard. At least on this call, I want to say that we thought we would make this writing workshop a very relaxed activity that would just allow us to have some fun and share some reading ideas. But the idea also would be that we think it'd be kind of fun, we being Andrea and I, and perhaps others of you, to have a quarterly book column in the BC, not so much a book review, but talking about a book that meant a lot to you for personal reasons, what it did for your friendships, your life, whatever, and a more reader-oriented response. So what we thought we'd do tonight is I'm gonna pose a question here and go through some categories. And then we'll take 10 minutes or so to write. We can mute while we write. And if you don't want to write, you can just think about these things. And then we'll come back online and we'll share everything we thought about. And these can be the beginnings of those, you know, books that meant a great deal to me column. This can be as serious or as light as we want to make it. And so here's what we came up with. What is a memorable book that has, A, been your companion throughout much of your life, B, influenced your reading habits, styles, what kind of books you like to read, genres, so on, C, helped you through a difficult time, D, fills you with happy memories, friendships, and associations, E, nurtured a hobby, and F, influenced your career. And shall I go through them again, just to give folks a chance to think them over a little bit? So the idea here is to write about one book that has been important to you because it either, and maybe it crosses these categories, maybe it does more than one of these things, but what is a book that's memorable with you, that stayed with you because it either A, has been a companion for much of your life, B, influenced your reading habits, C, helped you through a difficult time, D, fills you with happy memories and of friendships and associations, E, nurtured a hobby, and F, influenced your career. Now, if you've got a book in mind that doesn't do any of those things and you want to talk about it for some other reason, have at it. This would just would get us started. And my thought was that we could just pause the recording, and it's about 7:43. Maybe take, I don't know, do you think 5 minutes? I have 10 minutes. Does that seem right for people? Or
yeah, I think that's good, Susan.
Okay. Okay. And it would just take 10 minutes to reflect on that. Because you may, if you're like me, you may spend some time just thinking of books you've liked and then kind of figured out where they fall in that range. And then after those 10 minutes, we'll share what we've written, either by reading it aloud or just summarizing it. And this will just be some fun, possible, you know, fun articles for the BC on down the line. So does anyone have any questions before we stop the recording? Okay, if we can just pause the recording.
And I want to welcome Frank. And Frank, I did just forward you the email that Susan sent to me. It just, because it had the categories on it, I thought it'd be really easy for you to look at it. And you could, that way you could sort of participate if you wanted to.
Susan, it was hard to decide because so many books have influenced me, but I picked one.
It's always hard, but that's what's so cool about this. And then other people give you ideas and, you know, we just, I think there's so many people in CCB who are readers. It just seems like,
oh my gosh, yes,
this is what we do. And it goes way beyond CLUA, you know, so, yeah.
And I think I've already got kind of formulating an idea in my head for writing the first article for that column. So I think I'm gonna
Yay.
do that.
Yay. That sounds wonderful.
Well, since I was actually able to grind out that article last year about the convention, I feel like I can do, you know, like once I get going, I'm good.
Oh, you're a good writer.
Thank you.
You know, and once, you know, as you say, once you know what your, you know, your topic is offering. And the thing is, one idea begets another. So if we can just get that first idea going, they roll out, and then you can always weed out the ones you don't like.
Well,
you
it
know?
gives me a reason to trot out my new BT speak and try using it for writing an article.
Wow, that's cool. I
there.
See that one.
Wow.
A glorified Braille speak. Wow.
It's exciting.
Shall we begin? Frank, is it okay if we start? Are you?
Yes.
Okay. Who would like to go first? And you can read it or talk it. Doesn't matter.
David, would you go first? Because I'm really curious. You said there were a lot of books, and I'm curious which one if you pick one.
Yeah, you're going to wonder why I picked this probably,
It's okay. It's all good.
I did not write. I had to take answer a couple of emails, Susan, that came in that were very important.
No
unfortunately.
Problem.
So, A book that was very important to me when I was very little, I'm sure you all know it, was Follow My Leader by James B. Garfield.
Sure.
And one of the reasons that was important, I grew up, my parents had met, some of you knew about her. I don't know if any of you ever, I don't think any of you have ever met her. Dr. Isabel L.D. Grant, who was a longtime member of the Federation. But she was very different because she did not necessarily support all the Federation leaders. She was very concerned about international work, especially. But James B. Garfield lived in Los Angeles, where we were living. And so she and a very good, one of my best friend's mothers who learned Braille and eventually became a very well-known Braille music specialist, transcriber, Ethel Schumann, they both introduced me to James B. Garfield. And he was this old man, well, as far as I was concerned, I was, what, seven? And he had these very gnarled fingers. I remember his hands were shaking and everything. But he had been an actor when he was very young and in World War One, and he came from Atlanta, and he was an actor on Broadway. And, you know, it was very impressive, his acting career. But when he lost his sight in the 1940s, he stopped acting, which I thought was unfortunate. But at the time, I hadn't thought of it. But I was very excited because he told me a lot about his acting career. So it wasn't just the blindness that interested me, but that was also interesting that his character, Jimmy Carter, who got a guide dog when he was 11, but the fact that this man had such a varied career, and I wanted to become an actor. And I did.
Wow.
That's how I started doing community acting when I was younger. But the other thing was that Ethel Schumann brailled the book for me, and I read it, and I told my fourth grade class about it, and the teacher was so impressed that every day for 15 minutes, I was asked to read from the book to the class.
You were the class reader, the one we waited for after lunch every day, story time.
No, we did it in the morning, late morning.
Splendid.
And it was just kind of neat because I was actually able to practice my Braille reading and reading out loud. And the kids really loved it. And it also made me think more about my blindness and how I could function and succeed, you know, as a little kid, but realizing that blind kids could do anything they wanted. And I think that's what really influenced me. So there were a number of influences to that book.
You know, David, it strikes me that a book can be a mentor as much as a person.
Yes.
And you just illustrated that. What a great story.
So, you know, again, that's just one book, but you know, it had a number of influences in my life, not just one.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Well, keep that in mind for a BC article. That is really nice.
Yeah.
That's a great book. And there was another book that I don't know that was as well known, but it was also about a young girl who, I think, Follow My Leader, the kid lost his sight. They were messing with fireworks or something.
Yes.
We had a kid at my school who got a blasting caps went off in his face, and he was actually partially, he wasn't totally blind. He had some remaining vision, but I think, Susan, you might remember him. I think it was John Denning. He'd had something happen with
I thought it was Mike Sims.
Oh, maybe it was Mike. Maybe it was Mike. Okay, yeah. Maybe it was. And Mike was total. I was thinking it was John because he wasn't total. Oh. I think you're right. I think it was Mike. But there was another book about a young girl who loses her vision due to an illness in her eyes, and it's called Light a Single Candle.
I remember that.
A similar one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I liked that one, too. That was sort of along the same vein.
So what I'm doing is writing titles here, too, and then if people can't remember that. What was my book thing, I can tell you.
Right.
That's great. Who wants to go next?
Well, I'll go next. The book I chose is Jane Eyre because I read it when I was fairly young, and I have not read it since, and I think it's time for me to read it again because it's been a while. But I had read other books before that. I think the first book I really remember reading by myself from the library in San Jose, where we got our books, was Charlotte's Web that had been read to me, and I read it to myself. But when I read Jane Eyre, I was just like, oh my gosh, this book has 7 volumes. How am I ever going to get through all this? It's huge. Well, it was like all of a sudden this was so powerful. I just discovered what this great story and where it could take me. And I just remember, I think I read part of it at my grandmother's house, and my grandma always liked to tell people, oh my gosh, every time Andrea came over here, she had, Susan, do you remember those big, we had those big sale bags and we'd carry them and they'd be loaded with books. Those big
bags. Yes, I sure do. Oh, yes.
And every time I went to my grandma's, she'd say, oh my God, you're going to read all that while you're here? And I usually didn't have, I was usually overconfident as far as, you know, what I was going to read while I was there. But I wanted to make sure I had plenty of material just in case. Not that I didn't have a good time over there, but it was quiet and I loved to sit there and just read. But Jane Eyre was just, it was really special because I just, the story went along and, you know, it's about this young girl who is rather disadvantaged and she finds herself in, you know, a fairly fortunate situation where she's able to be the governess for this young girl there's this older man in the picture and, you know, they have a relationship and then there's other stuff going on. There's a mystery. And it was just such a great story. And I think it really opened my eyes to, wow, this is where books can really take you. Yeah. And I just remember being so just enamored. I couldn't wait to read more. I was just like, oh, gosh, I've got to keep going with this. And it wasn't so intimidating after a while, because I think that was probably the longest book I'd read to that point. And, you know, you stack those Braille volumes up, they look like a lot.
And it looks like you'll never finish, you know.
But yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
Well, gosh, yeah. I remember getting, I think I was 16. My mom and I were going to Hawaii, and I got a copy of Gone with the Wind that was not on APH. It wasn't in hardcover. It was a transcribed book, and there were like 32 volumes.
Because it was on one side of the page.
It was only on one side. And so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that one took me a while to get through, but Jane Eyre was really I always go back to that because that was the one that kind of opened my eyes. Wow. You know, this is really.
Well, and it took you across the ocean.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It took me to a whole different place.
That understanding of the kind of a world we live in is just an incredible thing. Do you remember how old you were?
I was reading at a pretty advanced level. I read Prince and the Pauper when I was like 8.
Okay.
And I remember reading that to my mom. She was sick in bed with the flu and trying to get through all that language, all those ain'ts and can'ts. And, you know, that wasn't the easiest book to read.
No.
But I identified with the girl in All the Light We Cannot See because my parents used to buy me a couple of Braille books every year for Christmas. That was part of my gift was, and I have most of them still here. I don't know what's going to happen to them.
Wow.
Because anybody wants them. They've stayed with me. I've kept them. I have The Prince and the Pauper. I have The Secret Garden. I have a couple of books of Mexican folktales.
Cool.
I have a child's book about Mozart. It's really for kids, but it's a really cool book about Mozart. Some classics. I have a Hans Christian Andersen's Fairy Tales, 5 volumes of those. My mom tried to pick, I think, classics, things that she had liked. I was probably 11 or 12 when I read Jane Eyre, maybe.
Well, I asked for two reasons, because you talked about wanting to come back to it again, and a book is a different book depending on when we read it. So it would be really neat to see what that felt like.
Yeah, I think it's time.
The book that you knew then and the book now, you know, that's... Mm-hmm. And the other reason I thought that was really cool, you know, when you were talking about the books, books I've saved and why would be a really cool article.
Oh, yes, my God.
Why are these in my life? You know, why have I kept these? Yeah. Thank you. Who wants to go next?
How about Nikki?
Okay. Nikki,
go for it.
Okay, and I'm sorry Linda Perel isn't here, because she's always been a good, and she's still a CCB member from what I understand.
Well, it's a little late for her, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, my mother was English, and so for some reason I got hooked on, when I was at about 8th grade, I got hooked on Daphne du Maurier and all the Bronte sisters and Jane Eyre, all that, and I read everything I could find. But earlier than that, my dad used to read to me all the time. And when I was about 5 years old, I think it was around then, he read me the autobiography of Harriet Tubman. And I was so upset because she was hit with this iron. I was so upset. And when I was in first grade, I learned how to read. He got me a library card. And we went to the library every Saturday. Well, I should add, he was an English literature professor. He got blacklisted, so then he became a machinist, and then he started importing books from China. So anyway, that was kind of his history. But he was an avid reader. He read to me. I don't ever remember my mother reading to me. And she went through law school, so I don't know what good that did her. But at any rate, the first book I remember reading for myself, and actually I read it to my dad, was the autobiography of Harriet Tubman, because I wanted to read it back to him. And then there was another one that I read to him that he had read to me also earlier, The Slave Who Freed Haiti, which was about Toussaint Louverture and the independence of Haiti. But he always read to me about heroes, of people of color. You know, I didn't know anything about the white heroes, but at any rate, I really, really loved to read, and I went through an awful lot of stuff. But I can't say that anything really, except, you know, those made a very, very deep impression on me. But the book that I've read, well, within the last 10 years, which has really frightened me, but it's basically a true story. During the 60s, I was living in San Francisco, and I saw what started to be a beautiful, beautiful sight. You know, they called it the love children and all that garbage, but basically they had community co-ops, they had community gardens, they had free clinics. We didn't have any homeless people. Everybody got care of some sort if they needed it, because there were free clinics all over the place. And it was like anti-establishment, and the establishment couldn't deal with it. So they came in, and the CIA became the world's largest drug cartel. They brought in all the pot, and it was free for a while, and everybody started smoking pot. They lost their determination to make the world better. They were sitting around smoking pot, and basically they destroyed that whole movement in the mid-60s. So anyway, it's called Dark Alliance, and it's written by Gary Webb, and it's an amazing exposé. And as a matter of fact, it was so dark that I could only read maybe half an hour at a time to my dad, and we spread it out over a long time because it was so dark and so depressing. But we finally got through the whole book. Anyway, he gave a talk in San Francisco, and my dad and I went there, and he said, he had been a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. So anyway, he said, I'm not going to live very long. He said, and you probably will get reports that I have committed suicide at some point. But he said, I am a marked man. since this book came out, I know that I'm a marked man and I know that they're going to murder me. But I want you to know right now that when you hear about my death and they lie and say I committed suicide, that will not be true. They can't stand the truth and they're going to put a stop to me. And they did. Within a couple of months, he was dead. Mm. But his book lives on. And if you want to read an amazing book, it's called Dark Alliance by Gary Webb. And it's just one of the most amazing books I've ever read. And that affected me just about as much as the Harriet Tubman did when I was 5 years old. And I read Dark Alliance probably, no, it had to be longer ago than that because my dad died in 2005. So it was probably the early 2000s, the late 1900s that I read that book to him. So,
you know, Nikki, yeah. Wasn't it great to read to our parents after they read to us?
Oh, yes. Well, see, he started losing his sight. And so he had his talking book machines, but we had regular evenings where I could read to him.
Sure.
And it was wonderful. But, you know, it's funny because my mother would read articles to him, but she wouldn't necessarily read to him what he wanted to be read to. But I would read whatever he wanted, you know.
Some people don't like to read out loud, even if they're very voracious readers. My brother was not a good out loud reader. I was lucky because both my parents were. But my brother was not particularly good at it. And it wasn't that he wasn't smart or that he didn't like to read, but he wasn't. Some people are kind of, I think, more cautious about their ability to read out loud. You know, Nikki, you reminded me talking about that. I had a friend in high school who read, does anybody remember the book Go Ask Alice?
Oh, yes.
Go Ask Alice. Okay.
Yeah. And it's, if you haven't read it, it's not a very long book. It's about a young girl who gets involved in drugs. Mm-hmm. And we don't know who wrote it. It's anonymous. It was never, I never credited anybody that I know of. But this friend of mine said, I want to read this to you. And she read it to me over the phone. So each night we would read a little more. And it wasn't, and then I've gone back and read it myself, and it isn't particularly long, and it's in the form of a diary. This girl is writing in her diary, and it's very compelling, I think. David, you know it, right?
Yeah, it was frightening in some ways, you know.
Yes, but compelling the way that whoever wrote it, the way that they did it.
It was very well written.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that got me going with my dad was he started losing his sight when he was 75. So that was 1985. And we got him involved with the Library for the Blind in San Francisco when it was way before it was in the new location. But because my mother was still alive, he wouldn't go to the lighthouse because they spent all their time together and she was his eyes. But after she passed away, within a couple of weeks, I had him down there and registering. But the interesting thing was that one of his books was recorded by the Vacaville folks. It was available in the Library of Congress for a while. It's called China Born, but it's probably so old that they don't have it anymore. But he ended up getting this machine. I think he was using the talking book machine when they were doing cassettes, but he was able to get this machine called the Reading Edge, and it would read, you could record or you could copy up to 50 pages of a book, and then it would read it back to you in one of 8 different accents. And one of the things that he found out very quickly, because he used to like to read the Beijing Review, and when you have an article that has a line across the middle of it, then the Reading Edge would just continue reading. So he'd be listening and then all of a sudden the topic would change and he wondered what was going on. Well, he figured it out himself. So those articles I had to read to him because there was no way to get the machine to just stop at that point. But it was fascinating because he loved that machine. He called it his amigo. And then when he passed away in 2005, Gabe was running the connection at that time. And it was the hardest thing for me to give it away. It took me about 6 months before I finally found somebody in LA who wanted it. And he said, how much do you want for it? I said, nothing. I'm giving it away. I said, my dad already paid for it. So you pay the postage and I'll send it along. So I did. And I don't remember his name, but if he's still alive, he's probably still using it because Xerox made some really, really good stuff. Anyway, so that's what kind of got me on that journey. But I love to read to people. And that's what I wanted to do when I was a kid. When I retired, I wanted to read to people. And that's exactly what I'm doing now.
Where are you reading now? What are you doing?
On Well Connected, I have 3 different programs where we read stories. I don't read them all. Different people read their stories. Mm-hmm. 2 of them are called Story Time, and 1 is called Inspiring Stories, where people read stories or they tell stories or whatever they want to do.
Nice.
You know, as long as it's uplifting. Well, actually, in story time, you can talk about death and dying, but on inspiring stories, you can't. It has to be uplifting. So anyway, yeah.
Well, you had quite an intellectual friendship with your dad. I mean, that's very...
Oh, he was amazing. But one thing that the reason I'm saying all of this is because I have a pinched nerve in my neck and I cannot write. It's really, really hard for me to write with a pen. I can type okay, but my computer's out of commission. So, but that's what I did after I had this car accident and I got, we got sideswiped with when I was in an Uber and, or we hit, got hit from the side and it pinched my nerve and I started having problems. I couldn't even write my own name for 2 years. It was a horrible, and but I didn't want to have surgery on my neck because it could have, you know, ended in complete paralysis. So, but I was in a creative writing class at the Jewish Community Center in San Francisco. So what I would do is, you know, we'd take our time, everybody else would be writing it. I'd be sitting there thinking, and I had my tape recorder with me. So when it was my turn, I would talk my story and I would record it. And then I'd go home and type it up in the computer and print it out.
However we do it is what we do. That's
exactly, exactly. Yeah. So thank you so much. I hope I didn't
This is what I hoped would happen tonight is people would just start telling stories because that, you know, that's where we're really going with it. That's great.
Thank you.
Who wants to go
I looked up, Go Ask Alice. It's available. I can get it. So it's probably available on Bard.
It's on Bard also.
Oh, there's good. Okay, great.
Audio as well as a Braille. Yeah.
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 Thank you very much.
Sure. We have Frank.
Susan?
And yeah, David.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing. This is David. I promise I'll be brief. What I really loved when I was a kid, if you remember, the American Printing House for the Blind produced a lot of books, not just for kids, but many for kids and some for adults. And it was they were not from the Library of Congress. They had their own funds.
Yep.
And I think that we should push for that again. They should provide more books. And they should start raising money for that. And I want to see more books in the hands of kids because I feel that even though we have Braille displays and all that, there is nothing like a hard copy book. And we're not getting rid of print books very quickly. And I want to see more hard copy Braille. I really, really do.
Because
I used to take it everywhere and I can take a Braille display and I read a lot of with a Braille display. But I think that, I mean, I used to get all these magazines. I remember I used to love it when we used to get the weekly reader in school and I would get it the same time the other kids got it. And I was just so proud that I could participate with them. You know?
Yeah. Walking around with your book under your arm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Filling your food on it. Just like everybody else.
No matter how many volumes it was.
Yeah. Well, let's see. We have Rob and Frank and Cachet and who else wants to share?
Okay, I wanted to just say I found Nikki's book. It is on Bookshare by Gary Webb. It's called Dark Alliance, the Contras, the CIA. Hold on, I'll tell you the whole thing. Just a minute.
3, 4.
It's not on Bard, but it is on Bookshare.
Right.
And she's right. It's by Gary Webb. Okay, it's the Dark Alliance, the CIA, the Contras, and cocaine. So I think it was probably a little more than pot, but anyway,
definitely.
Yeah, it is the book that she recommended. It is on Bookshare.
Great, wonderful.
And I just typed in Dark Alliance and it came right up, but I looked on Bard; it's not there. So, but you can get
That's okay.
So just to let everybody know.
So who's going next? Who's sharing next?
And thank you, Andrea.
You're welcome. I wanted to see, after you mentioned it, I wanted to see where, you know, if I could find it.
Great.
Well, I guess I can go next. I'm the host, so I wasn't too sure.
No, go for it, Rob.
Of course you should.
Go for it.
But I really couldn't put the books into these categories,
okay,
Susan. But what I've sort of done is sort of a chronological exposure to the books and maybe the time in my life. And the two that I read, the books I read as a kid, the C.S. Lewis, the Narnia books, I found impressionable, I think partly because of the narrator and just because of the imagination, the creativity of those books. I didn't really understand any of the Christian overtones or anything at that point. It was just reading it as a little kid, basically. And I think a lot of the books that I read as kids, I was affected by the narrator. And they had this book, Mutiny on the Bounty, narrated by a guy named Michael Clark Lawrence. And I just loved the way he did the different accents. And
that's a great story.
That was a good, really, and just the suspense and everything that the protagonist went through. And when I got into college, I had an English class that really kind of got me interested in literature. And the two stories were Notes from the Underground by Dostoevsky, mm-hmm. and then Death of Ivan Illich by Leo Tolstoy. Mm-hmm. And that kind of got me really interested in, a little more interested in actually reading. And then on a spiritual basis, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, Dan Melman. That was a book about meditation and mindfulness. And when I was working at the Lighthouse back in 1995, which David was talking about hard copy Braille, and it was great for me. I was determined to increase my Braille reading speed. I really wasn't a good Braille. I mean, I was okay as a kid, but I was more of an outdoors guy. You know, I wanted to be out climbing ropes and, you know, just mixing it up with the neighborhood kids and so forth. Sure. So anyway, Wilkie Collins had written a book called Moonstone. And I took that Braille, hard copy Braille home. And that was one of the first book that I read from the Lighthouse. And there were many others that I got that I would, and nobody, you didn't have to check them out or anything. You could just take them home. You know, nobody was, they weren't inventorying them or anything like that. So that really got me going on my Braille reading quest. And then my dad was a POW, in a German POW in World War II. And so one of the books by James Clavell called King Rat was all about a Japanese prison camp. And I found that quite interesting. Plus, James Clavell is just a captivating author anyway.
Sure.
And then Dean Koontz, I liked his book Strangers and a few others. And but I've been reading a lot. I've got so many darn books, I couldn't begin to sort them out. So
it's
but
like
that's
all
sort
these
of my
lives
path.
We live. Yeah, it's like all these different lives we live. And listening to this conversation, we have created. I think there is a blindness culture, and a lot of it has to do with reading and how we read and what we appreciate. When you're talking about great narrators and how that, you know, that makes us appreciate how a book comes together. And I know you've read a lot of World War II stuff because we've talked about that. And it's quite a fascinating period. The book that I chose to share tonight is called A Suitable Boy, and it's by Vikram Seth. Vikram Seth is from India. He was educated in both India and in England. And this is a novel set in India in 1945 to 1955. And it's a saga about a family. There's a Hindu family. And the book begins as the oldest daughter has gotten married, and they're starting to look for a spouse for the younger one, which is why it's called A Suitable Boy. But it's not really about that. It's about three generations of Indian Hindus and how they live. It's about a quirky mathematician teacher. It's about a friendship between one of the main characters from the Hindu family and a gentleman from a Muslim family, and how, despite all the fighting and everything going on with Pakistan, their friendship was not affected. That, you know, it had nothing to do with any of that. It's about how people rise above these, you know, these circumstances that their nations present to them and for them. Ordinarily, I read my books in Braille, but this book I listened to, it was a Bard book, and I listened to it because the narrator is one of my absolute favorite. It's David Hartley Margolin.
Oh, I love him.
But the reason this book meant so much to me is that I read it during the summer of 2010 when my father had gone into the hospital following a broken hip and a crashing of his liver, and basically his whole body was breaking down. And he spent 10 months in the hospital before he came home for hospice. It was the summer when he was in Kaiser San Mateo, and I was living with my mother in Redwood Shores, And every day we were going to and from the hospital, working with my doctor's care team. And sometimes I wasn't so sure they were a team at all. It was kind of medicine by committee and computer. My dad was in terrible, terrible shape and very unhappy. My mother had 1 foot in dementia and 1 foot in grief, as you might expect. And we were just kind of making it through every day. And when I would get home at night, I would get into bed and I would disappear into this novel. And I would just go off to India. It's reputedly the longest book in the English language. And David Hartley Margolin had a fascinating and entertaining voice for each and every character. And I would just go into this book and leave for a few hours, but always with an ear on my mother's door, you know, in case she needed something. And then in the morning, we'd get up and start over again. Well, one day, my father was having a very lucid day. And he said, "So what are you reading lately?" And I started telling him about the book. And he said, "Wow, that's interesting. Bring it in and play it for me." So I brought the recorder in. And after a few minutes, he listened for a while. And he said, "You tell me the story." And that was kind of an interesting twist. So I turned off the recorder and I was telling him the story. And then my mother got involved in the story. And so pretty soon we were all, and their involvement was a little bit episodic. They'd go in and out and in and out and I'd catch them up on this and that. But we were all involved in this book. And please understand, our immediate circumstances were horrible. My father kept contracting C. diff. He kept having infections. He kept having to be taken from one hospital to another. Things were going crazy. We were trying to keep mom's, you know, mind together. My sister and brother would fly out from time to time, and especially my sister, and help out. And you would think that we would want to read something more associated with that. But no, that novel was our escape into another world and another time. And we'd be in the middle of something really hard, and mom would say, "What's up? What's Lata doing?" Lata was the main character in this book, you know, where she would say, "Are they out of Calcutta yet?" And I would know it was my cue to start things. And I'm telling you, it got us through the most heartbreaking summer of life that I have ever, that I can ever be through. And it did not ruin the book for me. I still adore this book. It's one of my favorites. It's got a lot of humor right now. It's got a lot of humor in it. I think it's like 27 hours of reading or 40 hours. It's huge, but it's really worth it. And sometimes when you read a book in a hard period of your life, you can't return to it. Like there's songs you can't hear, but this one I can go back to. It was just absolutely beautiful. I have always loved India since I was a little girl. I had two pen pals, one in Mumbai and one in Agra when I was from ages 11 to 14. My friend Tina and I had this idea that we were going to grow up and take my tandem bicycle and ride it all the way across India. Because when you're 11, you can do anything you want like that, you know. So this
I'm downloading it right now. And there's another book by him called Two Lives. Have you read that one?
I have not read Two Lives. I've read An Unequal Music. And I've read the one about the one that's free verse about the guy in San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge. I've not read Two Lives. So that's good to know. Okay. Anyhow,
what was the title again, Susan, please?
It's called A Suitable Boy.
Because
they're looking for the right boy for Lata.
For their daughter.
And there's all kinds of interesting class consciousness going on. Her sister is married to this, or her brother is married to this really upper-class, snooty Calcutta girl, and they want her to marry into that family. But she's really interested in this guy who makes shoes. And that's who she ends up marrying. And it's just really cool. And it's full of exotic things too, like a wonderful Indian singer who's the mistress of one of the characters and who plays sitar and sarod, and you learn all about classical Indian music, and you know, monkeys get into the orchard where the family lives and they make all kinds of trouble, and there's a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream that the characters are in. It's an astounding story within a story within a story within a story. Intricately woven yarn, just lovely, lovely colors, lovely sounds to it.
Well, and that was kind of a bad time, 1948, because that was when partition had just happened. And I didn't know, you know, they don't teach about those things in school.
No.
I had no idea about partition and how many people were just slaughtered
Because yeah,
it happened to be on the wrong side of the arbitrary dividing line.
And these characters didn't want any part of the slot. These are just people trying to live their lives,
oh
right?
Oh, my God, yes. There's another great book that's similar to the one, and I read it maybe 5 years ago, and I cannot remember the author's name, but it's called A Fine Balance. And it's also quite long, but it's about India at the time of partition. And I was just, some of the stuff, it's just horrifying. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, and then there's these people, like you said, just trying to live day to day and do the best they can.
Well, it's what happens when partitions get made arbitrarily.
Oh, my God. The English just kind of sliced it up.
Well, and the English sliced a lot of the world
who was
up,
on
unfortunately.
What side of the border and what might happen to these people.
Yeah.
Well,
the English helped create part of the mess that we're in now in the Middle East.
I was just going to bring up Gaza.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely.
I read A Jewel in the Crown, which was a trilogy about India. Yeah, that was wonderful. Yeah.
My mother loves, I always joke with my mom, because I'll ask her if she's reading a new book, and I'll say, is it a tome, Mom? Because my mother loves tomes. And Mom likes to read books she will read them on a tablet, but she prefers books. So I have discovered I can go on Amazon and I can order books and have them sent to her.
She loves it.
If I find a book I like, I will just, and it doesn't have to be her birthday or anything. I'll just send it. Hey, Mom, here's a book. I've introduced her to several books that way. But I'll always, especially if it's something like historical, I'll say, a tome, a tome. And she's like, yep, it's a tome.
So much fun.
Wow.
Yeah. It holds us together in so
many
ways.
A lot of books from Libby and Hoopla. And I listen to everything audio if I can. I try to avoid getting books that I have to read because that means I have to sit down while I'm reading it. But if it's an audio book, you know, you guys are used to it, but I've only discovered that in the last 4 or 5 years. But it's wonderful because I can be chopping up my vegetables and I can be doing all kinds of things while I'm listening to a book. Can she do that?
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, can she do that? It's through the library.
You can, Libby. I don't know about Hoopla, but Libby, you can get, you have to be signed up with your local library though. And it has to be, and most libraries, I guess, are part of Libby now.
Right. Yeah, I think so. And like Hoopla works with San Francisco Public Library. However, sometimes I can't get stuff on Libby, but Hoopla has it. So I don't know how that works because it's all out of San Francisco.
What my mom's library does is they, if a book is like really popular, like what was the book that, Woodward and Bernstein, the one they just wrote about our dear former president. It had a one-word title. I can't think, but it's within the last 2 years.
Madman?
It wasn't that.
Madman? No, I'm just kidding.
It wasn't that. But my mom was waiting for it, and they called her, and they said, you know, we have this on tablet. If you want to take it now, you can read it. And she was like, oh, gosh, I really wanted the book, but I didn't want to buy it at Costco. And so she did read it on the tablet. It was fine. But they have these books on tablets that they can loan out. Then the book's preloaded. So you don't have to do anything. You just read it because it's already it's right there. Susan, do you remember that David Hartley Margolin came to Reno, I think, when.
Oh, yes. And he read us a story.
He did.
Yes.
He was marvelous. But my all-time favorite reader, oh, my gosh, he came to Omaha 2 years ago, and he just passed away, and that was Ray Fouché.
Oh, my God,
I love that man. You would have thought I was going to meet Elvis or something. I was so excited. Oh,
I think our narrators are our celebrities.
I have to meet him. Oh.
I think our narrators are our celebrities. Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
I met Roy Avers, I remember, a few times.
Oh, my gosh.
And he passed away. I met Mitzi Freelander.
I met Mitzi.
Yeah, they really were our celebrities.
And Martha Harmon Pardee, she told everybody her email address was Marhar Par. I thought that was so cute.
That is funny.
And she was married to a reader.
Eric Sandvold.
Eric Sandvold.
Yeah,
Eric Sandvold. Yeah. But David Hartley Margolin there's a book by John Irving, if those of you who are into John, he wrote The World According to Garp, and his books are kind of crazy.
Hotel New Hampshire.
I love him. Yeah. He wrote one called Last Night in Twisted River. And David Hartley Margolin reads that one, and it's fabulous. It's so good. Oh, my gosh. It's so good. And, you know, John Irving, all these crazy things happen. He just comes up with these, I don't know where he gets, you know, this kid kills his father's girlfriend because he thought she was a bear. I mean, all this weird stuff that happened.
Yep.
Oh, he's great. I love John Irving. He's
Like Bob Askew as well.
He's very good.
He was good too.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that Karen Kininger got us onto the, the commercial audiobooks, because it means we get books faster. Mm-hmm. But I miss some of the readers that we don't have anymore.
Yeah.
Aren't,
me too.
Milton Metz. Anybody remember Milton Metz?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was a good one.
One of the problems.
He read the Narnia books.
Hmm? What, Rob?
Well, Milton Metz. He was the reader of the Narnia.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Milton Metz. I remember. Yeah. And I remember those records at school.
Oh,
Susan,
my God.
I remember this. We'd go into the Braille room, like if you had a break or something, you could go up to this little corner and listen to the records. And they, of course, they were scratched and they were, you know, you'd listen to them and they were all this, you know, on the record player. And we had a set of, it was Swiss Family Robinson. And there were like 30 records. I mean, this thing was long. It took
me. Oh, yeah. I remember the big cases the they thing. Came in. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, great. It was really funny because I would, if I had 5 minutes, I'd slip in and just, you know, slip on the headphones and read for, you know, and then slip back out again. And, or if we were waiting for the bus after school, you had, you know, 10, 20 minutes, you could go in and read. We were so lucky, Susan, to have my gosh.
You know, Vista Center now has to, you know, recruit and find TVIs, and kids, a lot of kids are getting TVI instruction virtually and such. And that's another whole topic. I don't know how people do that because we had wonderful.
Yes.
We did.
Like homeroom center places of books and reading and writing.
Yeah,
and
we did too.
And you just, I don't know. I think we were very, very lucky.
I think kids nowadays are having serious problems because they're being dumped into schools without adequate education because the TVIs are only there, what, a few hours a week?
Don't have enough TVIs.
They don't have enough of them, no.
And some TVIs don't know Braille.
And
that, you know, I don't, but anyway, that's another whole thing. But that's our activity for tonight. I hope, I mean, I know it kind of went everywhere, but that's where we can go with the BC when you want to write some really fun stuff, you see.
Susan, I remember in Santa Monica, I have to say, they were so great in my elementary school and that they bought a whole bunch of Braille books from APH. And in our library, they actually had a section with Braille books for us. And they bought quite a number.
In the school library?
In the school library.
Right in there with your peers?
Yes.
Oh my gosh,
they were going to put them in the resource room. And we had some books there too. But they put them in the library so we could have the experience of the catalog cards and doing all that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I was so impressed when I was a kid.
Remember a series of books called, we had a bunch of them at our, books are done now. They were small books. They were soft cover and you could maybe 50 pages and they were called Real People. We had a bunch of them.
Yep.
And they were like Joan of Arc, Marconi, Marco Polo. And I remember thinking, geez, that's a game we play in the pool. There's really something to Marco Polo. I was like, where did that come from? They were these books, you could read them in like an hour. And I remember pulling them out of the bookcase in the Braille room and taking one with me to go home and reading it on the bus.
We had all these pamphlets.
When I got home, I read most of it.
We had all the Dr. Seuss books and everything in the pamphlets.
Oh, gosh, so great.
And we had all these science little pamphlets.
I was hoping Frank would tell us what his favorite. Is Frank still here?
Yeah, I'm still here. I've been enjoying this. But it's hard for me to pin down one book. One thing I have done, though, is that ever since my freshman year in high school, I've kept a running list of the books I've read. You know, not like textbooks, but just like... So I don't know it's as long as the list you guys probably have, but it was several hundred books, I think. We're fortunate to have access to books. And I think especially... for those of us who come from the working class,
yes,
that books are such a power, have the power to take you to yes. places that your life circumstances would never allow you to go to.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, that is right.
Well, that one other right. author I wanted to mention is Jack London.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my and, God.
Yeah, and I think the power of the short story.
Yeah.
He had many short stories, but one in particular was called To Build a Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one of those books that really got your attention. And I had a good experience with that. I got to read that. There was a, when I was at Fireman's Fund, they had a program to help the middle schoolers with their literature. And this one girl that I worked with was really kind of struggling. So we read that book together. And then she wrote me a, she put a nice birthday card together. They somehow knew it was my birthday. And she actually wrote out in print using twine and everything, happy birthday. So I thought
oh,
that
how
was
cute is that?
That is great. I love it when people do that.
That is great.
Yeah.
And that story is riveting, and he doesn't make it. I mean, that is a real scary little story.
Yeah, we're very yeah. scary.
Yeah. I read, it's funny you should say Jack London. I what really got me into biography was Irving Stone's Sailor on Horseback, which is about the life of Jack London. And, you know, he was an oyster pirate here in the Bay Area and he all kinds of crazy stuff. But before he went to the Klondike and I was reading that book while we were sailing. My dad had a boat. We were out on San Francisco Bay and I said, what are you reading? And I told him and he says, well, we just happened to be staying in Jack London Square tonight. It was so cool. You know, we
oh,
ended up, it was really, really neat. But that turned me on to biography. Then I went on to read, you know, Love is Eternal, The Agony and the Ecstasy. And you know, that was what I really started thinking about what, you know, a book is a life brought to you. And, oh, yeah, it was great.
I remember being in about the fifth grade, and we had to read a biography. Mrs. Glatter was my teacher, Pam Glatter. Uh-huh. We had to read a biography and write a report. And I had just seen the movie, The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, on television, because it was Cicely Tyson.
Yes.
Made her. Marvelous yeah. movie.
Yeah.
And Ernest I said Gaines. To her, may I, because she wasn't a real character, because she was made up, but she was sort of an amalgam of different people. And
right.
I said, may I write my paper on that book? And I was so glad. She said, of course you can. Because I truly, it wasn't a biography in the sense that she wasn't a real person. She could have said no. But she said, absolutely, you can. And I was just so thrilled because that's a great book. It's
oh,
great.
Ernest J. Gaines is terrific. And that book, you can argue in a way that it is a biography because so many African-American people went unnamed. Their stories.
Well, I'm
glad
she took it that way. He wrote another book called A Lesson Before Dying that is really good.
I like that too. Yeah. yeah.
And when I was in high school, when I went to a program called Self-Reliance Institute. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was through, it was sort of mobility boot camp. And it
Ooh.
Was sponsored by Sacramento Society for the Blind.
Oh.
I went in 1976. I was 16 years old. Didn't know anything about riding buses, but I found out. but with the last week we were there, we had a little camping trip. And one of the counselors read every night to us, okay, wait a minute, I have to think. Native Son. Oh, that is amazing. Oh, my gosh. Amazing book. I had never been exposed to any literature quite like that before.
Wow.
And she asked us, who wants to, you know, she read us the synopsis, and not everybody joined in. But she said, I am wanting to read this book to some of you because I think it's important that you hear this story. And, oh, my God, I was just totally hooked. I was, you know, after the first night, I was completely hooked on it. And I went back and read it a few years ago again. Really powerful stuff.
Really, it is.
Yeah,
really.
It is.
Oh,
yes, SRI was quite an experience. I'll have to tell you about that sometime, Susan.
I'm sorry, what was the name of the book again?
Native Son, and it's
Native Son. I didn't hear you say that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah. No,
you.
Native Son. Really good book. Oh my gosh. Really
Yeah,
good.
It is.
Very powerful.
Thank you.
This has been great, Susan. I really appreciate it.
It's been fun.
Oh, we just love to read around here. This is what we do, you know. Yes. This is, I just, books are everything. They really are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming on at the end of what I know has been a really busy day for everyone. And the whole pre-convention activities have been quite a race.